she's a good friend. You had no other friends, Great Aunt Stregaria informed me. If she comes with you, you will soon abandon her. She has nothing to offer you. My temper snapped. And you have everything to offer, and you're still not married. Silence fell like a hammer. I couldn't believe what I'd said, nor could anyone else. Great Aunt Stregaria looked stunned, utterly uncomprehending. I wondered, as my thoughts started to gibber in panic, if I could pretend that nothing had actually happened. Perhaps if I played dumb, she'd think she imagined it. She snapped out a word I knew I wasn't supposed to know, let alone say, then jabbed her finger at me. Dad started to say something sharp, but it was too late. A flash of brilliant green light darted from her finger and flashed towards me, blazing brightly. And then rebounded. I gasped in pain as my earrings overheated. It was all I could do to keep from tearing them off, and then stared as the spell struck the crone. Great Aunt Stregaria's black skin turned green and warty, just for a second, as she cast a pair of very hasty counterspells. Green light flared around her body, then faded away into nothingness as her skin returned to normal. She'd countered her own spell just in time. I stared, feeling triumph. I knew to be wary around Alana, and Bella could be unpleasant whenever she bestirred herself to do something nasty. But Great Aunt Stregaria terrified me. Even knowing her spells wouldn't last long, not on me, I was still unwilling to face her. And yet, now, she'd nearly fallen victim to her own spell. Her attempt to turn me into a frog, again, had failed utterly. My mother's voice was icy cold. "I believe I warned you about using magic on my children," she said. She rose, her hands falling into a casting pose. "You will leave this house. The wards will turn on you," Dad added. He didn't rise, but he didn't have to. The house saw him as its lord and master. It wouldn't kill Great Aunt Stregaria. She was of the blood, after all. But it would evict her on his command.
"You will leave."
I heard Bella make a stifled sound. Beside her, Alana looked as if she wanted to be somewhere, anywhere else. Her hair was trying to stand on end. For once, I was glad I couldn't feel ambient magic. The house wards had to be concentrating on Great Aunt Stregaria, threatening to crush her protections and remove her from the estate. Very few magicians could hope to stand up to an old house, protecting its bloodline. And my sisters could feel the pressure building around the crone, as if a thunderstorm was about to begin. Great Aunt Stregaria gave me a furious look that, 5 minutes ago, would have had me cowering, if not begging for mercy.
"Did you raise your daughter to be so impossibly rude?" "Please rest assured that Caitlin will be punished," Dad said. "But that does not excuse your actions. I granted you access to the house on the understanding that you would not try to hex my children."
"Children should mind their manners," Great Aunt Stregaria snarled.
I felt a flicker of guilt, despite the triumph. I'd touched on a very sore spot indeed. Great Aunt Stregaria's failure to marry and have children might well have cost her the chance to lead the family.
"I demand satisfaction."
"I will deal with my daughter," Dad said.
He stood, clasping his hands behind his back. I knew better than to think that was a placid pose. Dad didn't need to move his hands to cast spells.
"You will go straight to the gatehouse and leave. Your trunks will be forwarded to you."
Great Aunt Stregaria stared at me for a long moment, then pushed her chair back and rose.
"I could have offered you the world," she said shortly.
I wasn't sure just who she was talking to. My father, or me. Perhaps she'd believed she was doing me a favor.
"And instead you chose to reject it."
She stalked out of the room, not looking back. I watched her go, unsure just how I should feel.
Unholy glee at beating Great Aunt Stregaria was mingled with fear and guilt, and I told myself time and time again that she was a horrible person, but I'd been horrible to her too. Great Aunt Stregaria wanted to use me, I told myself. It made me feel a little better. She wouldn't have lowered herself to fostering me, to fostering anyone, if there wasn't anything in it for her. Alana giggled, a high-pitched noise that grated on my ears.
Cat!
Silence, Dad said sharply. Alana shut up at once. I would have been impressed if I hadn't known that Dad's tone promised trouble.
Caitlin, go straight to my study and wait for me there. I will be up shortly.
I sighed. I'd stepped over a line, and now I would have to pay. And yet I had been provoked. It wasn't fair. But there was no point in whining about it.
Yes, Dad.
Chapter 4. The door to my father's study opened the moment I touched it. I couldn't help feeling a flicker of excitement as I stepped inside, even though I knew I was in trouble. Dad's private workplace had always been off limits to us. The room was so heavily warded that even Mum couldn't enter without permission. I looked around as I walked towards one of the comfortable armchairs and sat down. I might as well try to stay comfortable while waiting for Dad to arrive. It was a remarkable room in many ways. Two walls were lined with bookshelves, groaning under the weight of family spellbooks and grimoires. A third was decorated in a detailed family tree, leading all the way back to the Thousand-Year Empire. I had no idea how much of it was truly accurate. The family record started to get a little vague a few hundred years back in time, but it looked impressive. My family had given birth to hundreds of movers and shakers over the years. It was hard to shake the impression that neither I nor my sisters would ever live up to them. I closed my eyes for a long moment, trying to concentrate. Dad was going to be furious, of course. He might well dislike his aunt, but he couldn't condone me being so horribly rude to her. Mum wasn't going to be pleased either. Perhaps I should be glad I was going back to school soon. But I knew all too well that my parents had long memories. They'd be happy to put the punishment on hold until the summer holidays. The door rattled, then opened. I sat upright, bracing myself as Dad stepped into the room and closed the door behind him. He didn't look happy, although there was a distant expression on his face that suggested he was communing with the wards. I couldn't help feeling a stab of bitter guilt as I recalled the implications. My talents might have, finally, revealed themselves, but I could never be the mistress of Aguirre Hall. The blood magics woven into the very walls barely even recognized my presence.
"Stand up," Dad ordered curtly. "Stand in front of the desk."
I rose, clasping my hands behind my back to keep them from shaking. Dad gave me a sharp look, then walked around the desk to sit behind it. I moved forward until I was in position and forced myself to wait. Dad didn't normally play petty power games by forcing us to wait for him to speak. He had to be more rattled than he cared to admit.
"Tell me something," he said finally. "What, exactly, were you thinking?"
"She was insulting my friend," I said. I told my hands to stop shaking. They refused to listen. "Dad, I..."
"And you decided to jab a knife in her heart?" Dad said.
His voice was toneless.
"You could have jabbed her with a real knife and it would have done less damage."
I swallowed. "Yes, Dad."
"I'm really very displeased with you," Dad told me flatly. "You will finish the sword tomorrow, correct? After that, you will spend the next 2 days assisting your mother with the herbal garden. I believe she has a great deal of work, which will go quicker with a pair of willing hands."
I had to fight to keep my face expressionless. My sisters hated gardening and spent far too long thinking of ways to get out of assisting with the herbal garden, but I loved it. Plants didn't care about your magic or lack of it. 2 days doing nothing but gardening would leave me stiff and sore, yet it wasn't a real punishment. I'd been uneasily anticipating something far worse. Alana had had to spend a week helping the maids after she tried to play a prank on an important visitor.
Yes, Dad, I said when I was sure I could keep the relief out of my voice. Dad knew I liked gardening. It wouldn't be pleasant, but it wouldn't be a nightmare either. I'll start as soon as the sword is finished.
Very good, my father said. Now tell me, why did you leave Alana in a cupboard for hours?
Dad, she trapped herself, I said, briefly outlining what had happened. I didn't know this spell would last so long.
I imagine she didn't either,
Dad said. He met my eyes.
Should I be punishing you for that too?
She did it to me, I pointed out. My parents hadn't done more than mildly rebuke her, believing that such torment would encourage me to develop my powers. She did it to me a lot.
True, Dad said.
He looked displeased.
Don't do it again, particularly when we have guests. Your conduct reflects on us, your parents. And while Aunt Stregaria is unlikely to tell High Society precisely what you said to her, the next person you mouth off to may tell the entire world.
I sighed. Do we have to bother with etiquette?
Politeness makes the world go round, Dad said.
He smiled rather humorously.
Being polite can diffuse someone's anger, even when there is no common ground between you.
He shrugged.
But here is a more important question. What was happening this evening?
I took a breath. Dad had asked me to analyze dinner meetings and social engagements before, although I'd never been very good at it. Alana had been better, to the point where she'd tried to encourage Dad to take her to more society engagements. Thankfully, Dad had rarely taken her anywhere he hadn't taken the rest of us. It would have done her ego no good. She wanted to make use of me, I said carefully. Her offer to foster me in Tintagel was an attempt to put me in her power.
Indeed, Dad said. Go on.
I hesitated. She didn't think of me as a person, I added. She was more interested in talking you into allowing me to go than convincing me I wanted to go. She talked in terms of benefits to you and the family, rather than me. Even when she started talking to me, it never seemed to occur to her that I might not want the benefits she was offering.
Very good, my father said. And why would she do that?
Because she thinks she can make use of me, I said slowly. By promoting me to the king, by presenting me at court, she presents herself as my guardian.
More or less, Dad said.
He leaned forward.
Do you understand the implications?
I hesitated, then shook my head. It wasn't entirely true. I thought I understood some of them, but I needed to hear it from Dad. He had far more experience than I did in maneuvering through tricky political waters. I tried not to think about the fact that Great-Aunt Stregaria had more experience than both of us put together.
A year ago, it was impossible to forge objects of power, Dad said. You know that as well as I do. Now, someone has discovered how to do it. You.
I nodded shortly.
Normally there are very few spells that cannot be analyzed and duplicated by other magicians, Dad added. You know that too.
Yes, I said. I might not be able to cast spells, but my understanding of theoretical magic was better than either of my sisters. There were spells, hundreds of spells, that were tied to specific bloodlines, or could only be cast by specific people. Yet a skilled theoretical magician would take them apart and rewrite the spells so that anyone could cast them. But that isn't true of me, is it?
No, Dad said. I imagine that quite a few forgers are trying to find ways to forge without actually touching the artifact, which will be quite limited, even if they do manage to get it to work. But even if they succeed, the only current source of true objects of power is you. Word has already leaked out, Cat. The duel you fought has started tongues wagging right across the kingdom.
I know, I said.
And you really had to pick a fight with Isabella Ruben, Dad added. Some magicians don't believe the stories, but her family, oh yes, they believe them.
I tried not to wince. There were spells that could destroy devices of power, spells that Isabella had tried to use on me. But I'd forged objects of power, and her spells had been worse than useless. Some adult magicians probably thought that Isabella had miscast her spells. She was only 12, like me. But her family wouldn't make that mistake. They knew what I'd done all right.
Great Aunt Stregaria is not the only one who wants to make use of you, Dad told me.
He pointed a finger towards a pile of letters, perched precariously on his desk.
I have over 50 letters, ranging from requests for private commissions to demands that you be barred from any further forging. Your talents have the potential for upsetting the balance of power.
I stared. They want to stop me from forging? Dad's lips twitched.
Right now, we have a monopoly on objects of power. That gives us an unbeatable edge. The other families won't like it.
They could look for their own zeros, I said. I remembered suddenly all the stories about disappointing children who'd vanished from high society. Had they been zeros too? I can't be unique.
Perhaps not, Dad agreed.
Alana had said the same thing back at table.
But tell me, how do you find another zero?
I considered it for a long moment. The answer was fairly simple, at least in theory. Cast spells on potential candidates and see how long the spells lasted. My experiments had proved that spells cast on me simply didn't last very long, no matter how much power the caster pumped into the magic. But doing that on people outside the city would be a logistical nightmare. There would be thousands of potential candidates, far too many to sort through in a hurry. And some of them will be common-born, I thought. What will high society make of that?
I have to work on the assumption that you are effectively unique, at least for the moment, Dad said. And that means that you are both a very important person and a very weak one.
I fought down a flash of anger. People, my sisters in particular, had been calling me weak for years. I'd grown to hate the word, and now I'd found a way to compensate for my weakness. Maybe I couldn't cast spells, but it didn't make me useless.
I'm unsure if you should be allowed to return to Jude's or not, Dad added. What do you think?
Rose is there, I said sullenly.
Yes, Dad agreed. But how many of the classes can you actually pass?
I glowered at him. You sent me there when it looked like I couldn't pass any of the classes, I pointed out. I can find ways to get through the exams.
It would be meaningless, Dad said. Would it not?
I felt another flash of anger. I may not be able to use magic to brew a potion, I said carefully. But I can forge a stirrer that will let me infuse precisely the right amount of magic to make the potion work.
Your mother wishes to talk about some of the older recipes, the ones that no one has been able to brew for 1,000 years, Dad said. But would using a stirrer of your own design count in the exams?
I thought we were graded on how well we'd brewed the potion, I said. I don't think anyone would complain if we used different tools. Dad cocked his head.
You didn't want to go to Jude's, he said. And now you don't want me to pull you out?
Rose is there, I said. I hesitated, then asked a different question. Was she right about Rose? Great Aunt Stregaria, I mean. Was she right when she said Rose had no prospects?
She would probably not rise to the very highest levels, my father said.
He took a moment to gather his thoughts.
Turning her into a reputable name in society would be a very long-term project, although quite a few of the older families have a lot of commoner blood. But a skilled magician can always find work. I would be quite happy to offer her patronage if she lives up to her promise.
I relaxed slightly. I'm not asking for her to marry the Crown Prince.
Glad to hear it, Dad said sardonically. The Crown Prince is already married.
I know, I said. The royal wedding had been 10 years ago. I had gone, of course, along with just about everyone in high society. But I'd been so young that I honestly didn't remember any of the details. It was a joke. Dad snorted, then leaned forward.
If you want to go back to school, I will reluctantly allow it, he said. Jude should be relatively safe, as long as you don't brew forbidden potions without permission. Very few families would risk taking hostile action within the school's grounds.
My fingers touched my dark cheek, delicately. The regrown skin had stopped itching weeks ago, as it blended into my skin. But there were still times when it didn't feel like me. I'd been lucky, very lucky, that I hadn't accidentally killed both Rose and myself. As it was, we'd come far too close to being expelled. And yet, if I hadn't been brewing the potion, I wouldn't have discovered how my talents actually worked. I will be careful, I said. A thought struck me and I smiled. If I'm the only one who can make objects of power, does it matter if I don't get good grades? Dad smiled back.
If you don't get a passing grade, you won't be allowed to move up a level, he said. Imagine being the only 19-year-old in first-year classes.
Ouch, I said. The older students, the upperclassmen, might be responsible for policing the junior students, but they certainly didn't socialize with us. There was an invisible barrier between the years that might as well be made of reinforced iron and stone, for all that it was impassable. An older student in a lower grade would be isolated from her age group as well as her peers. That would be bad.
It would be, Dad agreed.
He met my eyes.
Rose could come here, you know. I could hire tutors, if she wanted to continue with her studies.
I shook my head. Rose would hate it. She'd feel out of place, in a way that I could understand all too well. And it would cut her off from her family. Young girls went into service all the time, but this was different. She would neither be family nor servant, trapped in an ill-defined position that would never resolve itself. No, I said. Maybe I'd ask him to take Rose on later, if I had to leave the school, but only then. I had no doubt Rose would pass her exams. She might be ignorant, but she was far from stupid. I never had to tell her anything twice. We'll stay at the school together.
As you wish, Dad said.
He looked down at the desk.
Be careful, Caitlin.
I nodded. I was always careful. Having a sister who thought that hexing my chair or bed was a laugh had taught me to be very careful.
The family name can protect you from a great many things, Dad added. But it can't protect you from everything. Like it or not, the world changed the moment you crafted your first object of power. We may not see many visible changes, yet, but everything turned upside down. Aunt Stregaria is not the only person who will seek to use you.
Yes, Dad. My father looked up at me.
Your mother and I believed that you would inherit magic of your own, he said somberly. You were one of three triplets. Everything we knew about magic told us that you'd have it too, that the three of you would form a triad greater than the sum of its parts. We made the choice, and it pained us greatly, to allow your siblings to encourage you to develop your powers. And there were enough signs that you did have some form of magic to convince us to continue. We simply didn't realize what you were.
I couldn't speak. My mouth was dry.
That was a mistake, he admitted. We allowed your sisters to bully you relentlessly for nothing. In doing so, we damaged all three of you. Alana and Bella have bad habits of their own, habits we have failed to curb. In some ways, Aunt Stregaria is right about sending children out to fostering. A distant relative would be less inclined to put up with unpleasant behavior.
I looked down. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to believe that my parents, who I loved and respected, could make a mistake. And yet I knew they had made a mistake. Everything they'd done in a bid to bring out my magic had been both cruel and pointless. I had no magic. There wasn't even a spark that could be fanned into a flame.
"We will do what we can to make up for it," my father told me. "But that will not be easy."
"I know," I said. I couldn't meet his eyes. I almost wished he was shouting at me instead. It wasn't your fault.
"We knew no better," Dad agreed. "But that doesn't make it right."
He rose.
"Go back to your bedroom and sleep," he ordered. "Sir Griffin's will be here tomorrow afternoon. I believe he's looking forward to inspecting your work."
"Yes, Dad," I said. Dad sighed.
"And that sword will start an avalanche," he added. "I wish you'd come to me when you figured out what you could do. We could have planned how to tell the world before it was too late."
I nodded as I turned to leave. He was right. In hindsight, I shouldn't have let Isabella goad me. But if there was one thing I had learned in 6 years of study, it was that there was no way to call back a spell once it was cast. And we would just have to live with the consequences. Chapter 5 The workroom felt uncomfortably hot as I bent over the sword, carefully carving the last set of runes into the metal. Sweat trickled down my back, reminding me just how much was at stake. A mistake now, even a single rune marginally out of place, would render all of my time and effort utterly wasted. Dad would not be pleased. I finished drawing out the second-to-last rune, then took a step back. The sword seemed to glow, although I was fairly sure I was imagining it. My calculations insisted that the spell form wouldn't take shape until the very last rune was in place. And yet I wasn't entirely sure. There were too many hints, clues, and misleading statements in the ancient books for me to be completely confident in my own abilities. The writers might well have left out more than one crucial detail. Wiping the sweat from my brow, I put the etching tool down on the workbench and reached for my spectacles. I'd designed them myself, after discovering the limitations of the original designs. It was surprisingly comforting to know that, in some respects, we were more advanced than the ancient sorcerers. We'd had to come up with too many innovative workarounds for our devices of power to be anything else. I perched the spectacles on my nose and peered around the room. The walls glowed faintly, reflecting the magic embedded into the mansion. But the sword was dead and cold. There was no magic flowing through the blade. Not yet. I took a step forward and examined the runes, making very sure that I hadn't made a mistake. Magister Tallyman had insisted, when I'd been working as a TA, that it was possible to correct an error if one caught it in time. But I had never succeeded. The ancient sorcerers hadn't thought it was possible either. "It's done," I muttered. I'd gone as far as I could without Sir Griffin's. And now... I stepped into the antechamber and rang the bell. Lucy entered the room a moment later, curtsying hastily to me. It felt weird to have her show so much respect. The maids had never been particularly impressed with me, even though I was their master's daughter, until I'd insulted Great Aunt Stregaria to her face. Dad might have pronounced a horrific punishment, or at least something most people would consider a punishment. But the maids thought I was wonderful. If Great Aunt Stregaria had been horrible to us, her great-nieces, how had she treated the maids? "Please find Sir Griffin's and bring him here," I ordered. A family friend or not, Sir Griffin's wasn't supposed to wander our halls without an escort. "It's time for him to receive his sword." Lucy curtsied again and hurried off.
I turned to the table in the antechamber and picked up the latest copy of Forger's Weekly. There was a large painting of me, or someone who was supposed to be me, on the front cover, probably drawn from the family's official portrait. I looked about 5 or 6 years older, my skin a shade or two lighter. It was quite possible that anyone passing me in the street wouldn't recognize me, if that painting was all they'd seen. I suppose that wasn't a bad thing. The article inside the covers was long on hyperbole and short on actual facts. Whoever had written it clearly hadn't been a witness to the duel. They'd heard everything at second or third hand, ensuring that the fragments of truth were mingled with exaggerations or blatant lies. I had not recreated the Emperor's Power Stone, nor had I blasted a giant hole in the school's walls. Castellan Wealdon would have expelled me for that, I was sure. There was a knock at the door. My mouth was suddenly dry. "Come in," I managed. The door opened. Sir Griffin stepped into the room. He was immense, easily the largest man I'd met. His blonde hair, a fraction too long for society's pleasure, framed a rugged face that had half the maids swooning whenever he came to call. The silver armor he wore, covered with protective runes, outlined a muscular body. His hands, scarred by countless battles, were large enough to make mine look tiny. I had never thought of him as particularly clever. His attempts at mending his own armor and weapons had frequently made matters worse. But he'd always been kind to me. That alone gave him status in my eyes.
"Lady Caitlin," he said gravely.
His voice was deep, commanding.
"I believe you summoned me."
I swallowed. "Your blade is nearly ready, sir," I said. Sir Griffin's was a knight, a servant of King Rufus himself. I had no idea of his birth, but he deserved respect for his knighthood alone. "I just need your assistance with the final step." Sir Griffin's bowed. He couldn't hide the anticipation in his eyes.
"It would be my honor, my lady," he said. "What do you want me to do?"
"Exactly as I say," I said. I turned to open the door. "Come with me." I couldn't help feeling concerned as I led the way into my workroom. Sir Griffin's meant me no harm, I was sure, yet his mere presence could upset the magic. If he took a step too close to the unfinished blade, I wasn't sure what would happen then, but I had the feeling I wouldn't like it. Rose's mere presence had made a highly volatile potion explode so violently it had nearly killed both of us. "You'll see the marks on the floor," I said, pointing to the lines. I'd measured them out carefully, carving them into the stone. "Do not step over them until I give you leave." Sir Griffin's nodded. I hoped he'd listen. He really wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, but then he didn't have to be. Hacking away at enemies with a sword didn't require utter brilliance, merely strength, stamina, and determination. I'd heard his brother was smarter and a magical tutor in the capital. No doubt he'd inherited the brains, while Sir Griffin's had inherited the brawn. Their parents weren't slouches either. "The blade is almost ready," I repeated. It was easier to keep my voice steady when I started to talk about forging. "I have to trigger the spell form to finish the work. For that, in order to bind it to you, I need a sample of your blood." I saw a shadow cross his face. I didn't blame him. We were all taught, from birth, to be very careful with our blood. An enemy who acquired a sample of my blood could use it to curse me from the other side of the world. Perhaps. I wasn't entirely sure it was true of me. My nature might make it impossible for the curse to latch on. But it was true of everyone else. I used the blood rituals religiously, just like everyone else. There was no point in taking chances.
"Very well," he said. "But I want to take the knife afterwards."
"I can't use a salve to dampen the pain either," I said as I picked up the knife and the glass container from the workbench. I'd made both of them myself, washing the knife repeatedly until it was completely clean. I didn't dare risk contamination.
It will sting. Sir Griffins lifted his bushy eyebrows.
Worse than having a sword slammed into your leg?
I giggled despite myself. Sir Griffins had been through hundreds of battles and suffered countless injuries, if half the stories were true. He wasn't likely to be bothered by me cutting his arm so I could collect some of his blood. But then I had had paper cuts that had hurt worse than broken bones. I didn't understand how that worked, but it was true. No, I said. I passed him a cloth. I couldn't give him any potions or salves before the ritual was completed, and then stepped towards him. Roll up your sleeve, then hold out your arm. Sir Griffins did as he was told. I braced myself, then pressed the knife against his flesh. A droplet, and then a line of blood welled up. I fought down the urge to recoil. Blood was bad news, even for me, as the liquid started to drop into the glass. Sir Griffins showed no sign of pain, but then he would sooner have cut off his own arm than show weakness in front of a girl. It would not have impressed the maids. Press the cloth against the cut, then wait, I ordered once I'd collected enough blood. I'd seriously considered taking more, just in case there was an accident, but working with blood was enough to make me nervous. I would just have to ask him for a second contribution if I needed more. Do not use magic to seal the wound.
Understood,
Sir Griffins said. He sounded perfectly normal, as if we were discussing the weather instead of working on a ritual. I wouldn't have been so calm if we'd exchanged places.
I will wait.
I placed the glass on the workbench, then picked up the etching tool and dipped it in the blood. My heart started to beat like a drum as I pressed the tool against the blade, slowly carving out the final rune. If this worked, it would have been easier, far easier, to forge a sword that anyone could use. But Sir Griffins had wanted something special. The room grew warmer again as the rune took shape. I braced myself as I carved the last line. If I'd made a mistake... The blade glowed, a brilliant white light that stabbed into my head and sent knives of pain slicing into my brain. I yanked the etching tool away, lifting one hand to cover my eyes as my head started to pound. Sir Griffins let out an oath. I decided it would be better to pretend I hadn't heard it, as the brightness increased, forcing us both to turn away. And then the brightness snapped out of existence, as if someone had blown out a candle. I blinked, trying to get the spots out of my eyes. My head was ringing with pain, although I wasn't sure why. The light hadn't been natural. My hands looked as though they were translucent. I blinked and the effect vanished, leaving my hands as solid as they always were. It made no sense. What had I done? Think about it later, I told myself firmly. The sword lay on the workbench, glowing faintly. I reached for the spectacles and put them on, swallowing a word I knew Mum would not have liked when I looked at the sword. It glowed with magic, a spell form that twisted up and down the blade. It had worked. I'd forged an object of power. But it wasn't quite finished yet. I turned to look at Sir Griffins. "You have to take the blade," I said. "Pick it up with your sword hand and hold it in the air." It would have daunted me if someone had told me to do that. The blade was so large that it was hard to believe that a grown adult could have lifted it with only one hand. And yet, Sir Griffins took it in his stride. He stepped forward, held his hand over the grip, and then picked it up effortlessly. Even his hand looked small compared to the blade, but it rose as if it were as light as air. The gemstone I'd worked into the pommel glowed brightly as he lifted it higher. Faint flickers of magic danced around the longsword as it bonded with its new owner.
"It's perfect," Sir Griffins breathed.
He stepped back and assumed a combat stance, slashing out at an imaginary foe. The sword darted forward and back as if it were made of pure light, flaring brightly as he thrust it outwards. It was so long he would have to wear it over his shoulder rather than on his belt, but I had a feeling it wouldn't cause him any problems.
The blade would practically leap into his hand when he called. And it might even have other powers, too. If it stays with him long enough to develop them, I thought. The ancients had insisted that a magical weapon would grow into the perfect match for its wielder, once it had grown used to him. But my calculations insisted that the spell form would remain stable unless someone damaged the blade, and that would render it completely useless. I stepped back, somberly, as Sir Griffin's put the longsword through its paces. Magister Talliman had shown us a similar blade, one forged in the Thousand-Year Empire. It had been a genuine object of power, one that had endured until some idiot removed one of the gemstones. Whatever the stone had been worth, the working blade had been worth far more. Now it was just a piece of scrap metal. I might have been able to fix it, but if it was bonded to someone else, I'd never be able to use it.
"This is brilliant," Sir Griffin said.
He let out a deep laugh.
"This is fantastic."
He bowed deeply.
"I thank you from the very bottom of my heart."
"You are welcome," I said stiffly. My cheeks grew hot. I was thankful my skin hid the blush. I wasn't used to praise, not like that. "I designed a scabbard for you, but you'll have to wear it over your shoulder."
"I don't want to put it down," Sir Griffin said.
His smile was so bright that I couldn't help thinking it made him look like a little boy.
"What can it do?"
"Cut through almost anything, if you press it against something," I said. "You do need the intent to cut."
"It would be embarrassing if the blade was dropped on the floor," Griffin said.
His smile grew wider.
"It might cut its way to the planet's core."
"That can't happen," I assured him. "Your intentions are important." I paused, gathering my thoughts. "You should be able to block curses and hexes with the blade. The magic should give you some additional immunity, even if you don't manage to swap the curse before it strikes you. You should also be able to cut through wards, but a skilled sorcerer could probably design wards capable of trapping or reforming around the blade."
"I've met warlocks who did just that," Sir Griffin said.
"And you won't be able to hide the blade," I added. "The magic is quite distinctive. Once you take it out of the wards, anyone within 50 meters will probably be able to sense its presence." Sir Griffin's didn't look displeased at the thought of being made a target. If anything, the prospect of everyone seeing him coming seemed to delight him. And yet, I shook my head, feeling a flicker of disquiet. I couldn't sense the blade, not even if it was right next to me. The effect was predictable. My calculations had indicated that it would be there. Yet I would never see it for myself. I was probably the only person in the world Sir Griffin's could sneak up on while carrying the blade. He took the scabbard and slipped the blade in and out, testing how it moved.
"Who else can use it?"
"Anyone closely related to you," I told him. "A brother or sister, a child. Anyone else would simply find it too heavy to lift. You might be able to give it to your cousin, but I don't know if it would work for him."
"Good,"
Sir Griffin said. He smiled, as one does at a particularly bad joke.
"I wouldn't want someone to steal it."
"No," I agreed. "And don't let anyone steal the gemstone either. It would cancel the magic."
"I understand,"
Sir Griffin said. He swung the sword to the air.
"This is brilliant."
He reached out and slapped me on the back.
"I owe you a boon, young lady," he said. "You may have anything, anything at all, as long as it is within my power to give it to you."
"Within reason," I added silently. Dad had taught me to be careful what I promised. Bad things happened to people who didn't keep their promises. Sir Griffin's really should have known better. If I asked him for something that conflicted with his other oaths, I might put him into an impossible position. It might even kill him. If I ask for the wrong thing, I pushed the thought aside. "If I need a boon, I will ask you," I said. It wouldn't have been polite to decline the promise. "And I hope you enjoy the blade."
"Oh, I enjoy it already,"
Sir Griffin said.
He held it up in front of his face.
This is perfect. Absolutely perfect.
I had to smile. He looked like an overgrown puppy.
Thank you,
he said, as he picked up the knife and the blood-stained container.
And I meant what I said.
I rang the bell for Lucy, then sent Sir Griffin's and her back the guest wing. I had a feeling Sir Griffin's wasn't going to stay, not after bonding with the blade. He'd probably start riding back to Tintagel, just to show off his blade to his fellow kingsmen. They wouldn't believe it, not at first. Then they'd all want one too. And I can make them, I thought, as I started to clean up the workroom. The thrill would fade, I knew, so I determined to enjoy it as long as I could. And who knows what else I can make. Chapter 6
I trust you had a good breakfast, Mum said, in a manner that made it very clear that I was in trouble. You have a lot of work to do.
I nodded, not trusting myself to speak. Mum had ordered me out of bed at stupid o'clock. The sun had barely been peeking over the horizon, and sent me to join the maids for breakfast before getting changed into gardening clothes. It was a very clear sign that I was in disgrace, even though I knew Mum loathed Great Aunt Stregaria as much as everyone else. I had been unforgivably rude, and my parents were not pleased. But it could be worse, I thought. They could have sent me to clean the bathrooms instead. Mum looked me up and down, then nodded in grim approval. I concealed my amusement as she shoved a basket of gardening tools into my arms, before turning to march towards the door. Gardening was the only time I was allowed to wear clothes that would have shamed a beggar on the streets. The rough, ill-fitting shirt and trousers made me look like a tramp, but they could endure more abuse than my regular clothes. And when I came back to the house, covered in earth and mud, they could be dumped in the washroom for a thorough cleaning, without worrying about damaging them. I tied my hair back into a bun, then followed Mum through the door and out into the garden. The warm air, tinged with a hint of the oncoming winter, brushed against my face as I closed the door.
"Don't dawdle," Mum snapped.
"Coming," I assured her as I hefted the basket and walked after her.
"What are we doing first?"
Mum didn't answer. I sighed and kept walking. I'd find out soon enough. Our herbal gardens are my mother's pride and joy. Master potioners like Mum prefer to grow as many of their ingredients as possible, even though some of the rarer items, like dragon scales or octopus tentacles, can only be purchased from a handful of very high-class stockists. Mum insisted that being able to produce her own herbs helped keep prices down, although it also ensured that she knew everything about how the ingredients had been produced. Even something as simple as cutting herbs can cause problems if one uses a silver blade instead of an iron knife. And that can make a difference, I thought. Using a silver blade could make it harder to use a herb in a potion. I put the basket down as I reached the edge of the herbal garden, my mother chanting a handful of spells to unlock the protective charms covering the chessboard patchwork of herbs and other ingredients. Alana had once tried to break into the garden on a dare. She wound up hanging upside down until Mum had come along to free her, then rebuke her for daring to even consider trying to sneak through the wards. They were designed to keep out pests, but not all pests walked on four legs. Alana had never dared try to enter the garden without permission again. The wind shifted, blowing towards me. I took a deep breath, enjoying the scent of dozens of herbs mingling together. Mum claimed that gardening was relaxing, and there were times when I was tempted to agree with her. We'd spent many happy hours planting seeds and cutting herbs, back when she'd been trying to use potions to bring out my magic. It had been futile, yet it had actually worked in my favor. I'd learnt the value of precision long before I'd needed to use it.
"Come inside," Mum said.
She pointed to a barren patch of fallow ground.
"You'll be breaking that for me today."
I picked up a shovel and carried it into the garden. Mum had left the ground fallow for 3 years, long enough to allow it to recover from whatever she'd been doing there. It had grown hard, unsurprisingly. Breaking it up so that something new could be planted
wouldn't be exactly back-breaking labor, not here. But it would be boring, and I'd wind up covered in mud.
Make sure you put any stones to one side, Mum directed, as I pushed the shovel into the earth.
It was hard, resisting stubbornly until I put all my weight on the shovel.
And dig as deep as you can.
The sun rose steadily as I dug, picking up pieces of earth and breaking them up before dropping them back on the ground. There weren't many stones, thankfully. Mum had cleared the area long ago, back before I was born, and kept it watered ever since. The handful I did find I put aside, save for one that looked like a long-lost gemstone. It was probably nothing, but Dad would want to take a look at it anyway. The hall was so large that we kept finding things former generations had lost or concealed over the centuries. My hands and back were aching when Mum finally called a halt, passing me a bottle of sweetened lemon juice as I leaned on the shovel. I sipped it gratefully, feeling sweat trickle down my back. The clothes were starting to itch. I promised myself, silently, that I'd take a long bath when I got back to the hall. Mum would probably insist on it. I'd be washing off so many layers of dirt that I might clog up the pipes.
Not too bad, Mum said grudgingly.
She studied my work for a long moment, then pointed me to a second patch.
You can start work there now.
I nodded sullenly. The sun hadn't even reached meridian, let alone started to descend. It felt like we'd been outside for hours, but there was no point in arguing. I walked to the next patch of ground and started to work. Mum stayed where I'd been, using a smaller trowel to dig holes and plant seeds. It would be months before our labor bore fruit, but I was confident it would be worth it. The herbs we didn't use would be packaged up and sold to the local apothecary.
What you said to Stregaria was cruel, Mum said, without looking up from her work. You do know that, don't you?
Yes, I said. I knew better than to stop working. But she was very rude to me.
Yes, Mum said. And you shouldn't have let her get to you.
I looked up.
What would you have done if she'd been insulting Lady Meadows? I might have pointed out that she was wrong, Mum said. A common-born magician could make a good apprentice, as you know. Or find something else to do with her life that doesn't include groveling in the dirt.
Yeah, I said reluctantly. But I didn't think of it. Mum stood.
I understand that you were angry, she said. And I understand that you had reason to be angry, but you cannot let your anger rule your life.
I know, I said.
You are a child, Mum said.
She dropped the trowel back into the basket.
When you are an adult, such behavior will have far more serious consequences.
I scowled. Why doesn't it have any consequences for her? Mum smirked. She'd deny it, I was sure, if I asked, but I knew what I saw.
Stregaria is welcome in very few halls, she said. Hosts are very inventive when coming up with reasons why she shouldn't attend formal gatherings. She is very isolated, for all she pretends it doesn't bother her.
She met my eyes.
And while that doesn't excuse her behavior, she added, it may go some way towards explaining it.
Ha, I muttered. I wasn't interested in explanations. The only way Great Aunt Stregaria could make me happy was if she never intruded on my life again.
She's a crone.
Mum shot me a warning look.
Be careful what you say, she said. I dread to imagine what would happen if you had been an adult.
Feuds have started over less, I thought. I broke the last patch of ground, then stepped back to admire my handiwork. It didn't look any different from the flower beds, but I knew it was bursting with potential. A few dozen seeds, some water, and patience. It would soon give birth to new life. And the herbs we seeded would be turned into ingredients for potions in a few months. I wondered idly if any of them would be sold to Jude's. The school went through more potion ingredients in a day than my mother went through in a year.
Very good, Mum said. And just in time, too.
I turned. Lucy was approaching, carrying a covered basket in one hand and a picnic rug in the other. I smiled at her as she laid the rug on the ground by the edge of the garden, then placed the basket on top and strode away. Mum walked over to the basket, opened it and produced a set of sandwiches. I followed her, shaking my head as I saw just how much food the staff had crammed inside. Ham and cheese sandwiches, hard-boiled eggs, a selection of apples and oranges, and a bottle of ginger juice. I couldn't help wondering if they thought they were feeding a small army.
Sit down, Mum said.
She passed me a sandwich, then took one for herself.
Are you looking forward to going back to school?
I took a bite, feeling suddenly ravenous. Gardening had always left me feeling hungry.
I don't know, I confessed.
I'm looking forward to seeing Rose again, but...
Mum nodded. I was pretty good at school, she said. But I don't remember it with any fondness. Pretty good, I thought wryly. She was being very modest.
Mum had been valedictorian for 2 years running, then gone straight into a brilliant potions apprenticeship that had catapulted her to fame and fortune. Dad had done very well too. Are any of us going to live up to them?
It has its moments, I said.
I had enjoyed some of the classes, as well as the chance to learn from some of the most experienced magicians in the world. It was just the other kids I disliked. They'd sensed my weakness and attacked. Perhaps I'd taught them a lesson when I'd beaten Isabella, or perhaps not.
I just wish...
I shook my head as my words trailed off. What did I wish? That I'd been born with power? Or that I'd been raised somewhere where my lack of power wasn't an issue? Or... I shivered as I remembered Rose's bare feet. The pockmarks from a childhood disease were too embedded to be removed without magic. Yet Rose's family hadn't had the funds to hire a healer. And she'd been one of the lucky ones. She'd told me that far too many of her peers hadn't lived through their first decade.
No magic can change the past, my mother said.
Her dark eyes were sympathetic.
All you can do is make the best of it.
Or not, I muttered. Did Great-Aunt Stregaria make the best of it?
It just doesn't seem fair. The world is not fair, Mum said flatly. And sometimes bad things happen to good people.
She finished her sandwich, then pulled a bottle from the basket and put it to her lips. I felt an odd rush of affection, knowing that my mother normally wouldn't do anything as lowly as drinking out of a bottle. But then she was wearing tattered old clothes and getting her hands dirty too. Dignity and gardening didn't really go together.
I found several new potion recipes we might want to try, she said as she passed me the bottle. They all require very precise infusions of magic.
I took a long drink. The ginger tasted strong enough to make me cough.
And perhaps cannot be made by real magicians?
Perhaps, Mum agreed.
You have managed to answer a great many questions, Cat, but you have also given me far more.
I nodded as I reached for another sandwich. There were hundreds of potion recipes that no one, not even my mother or Magistra Loanda, had been able to make. I'd read the long-winded articles written and distributed by the Potioners Guild. Every attempt had either failed completely, dissolving into a muddy sludge that was only slightly more magical than myself, or exploded violently enough to burn through wards and do serious damage. And yet, the promise kept potion masters trying to brew the recipes. A potioner who managed to get just one of them to work would make his fame and fortune overnight. Particularly the one that grants superhuman strength, I thought. The ancient tomes insisted that it had been invented in a tiny village, now long since wiped off the map. But no matter how one fiddled with the ingredients, the best anyone had managed to get was a reasonably tasty lobster stew. Something must have been left out of the recipe when it was written down.
I can design a stirrer for you, I said.
Mum had more than enough control over her magic to charge and use it, I thought. And even if she didn't, she could practice before she actually tried to use it. And I'll forge it over the summer holidays.